as you guys know, after seeing many mistakes, I'm definitely not the smartest guy, right? Just in general, like you have each watched me make individual mistakes, but he had a quote that absolutely hits it out of the park. And when he talks about climbing the ladder, he says, climbing the ladder is not about performance. It's about the judgment of performance. It's about the judgment of performance. It's not actually what you do. It's how it's perceived when you actually do it. And when I think about, let's take this back to the student government days, just because you're looking at three presidents and a beta, right? The reason why I bring it up is because when you look at Ethan and Austin's campaign compared to Jody's and I campaign, they were two more qualified individuals who had probably been working on their campaign for a year compared to two less qualified, meaning, hey, less experience, less time in the organization, right? Not by much, but still. But the votes said otherwise, right? Because it's not about the job. It's not about the performance. It's about the judgment. It's about the judgment of others. And then I look at my job and where I'm at and how fast I've excelled when there's guys on my team who are actually much smarter than me and much better. But it's about doing something and having it seen that you're actually doing it. And one thing I've gotten really good at, and it really stood out to me after reading this book, is making sure that people see when I win. I don't have to vocalize all the time when I lose, because quite frankly, most people only care about wins. And I only care about wins, unless it's coming from, we talked about failure and we talked about learning from it. I can keep that behind the door, but as soon as I'm winning, anytime there's a big number to share, anytime I did a big project, big achievement, you bet your ass I put that out there. And it's not a cocky way, right? There's an appropriate way to do it, but it's not about what you do. It's the judgment of how you did it. And I literally read that and I was like, dude, it's right. Because there's so many people out there. I think about my dad, right? And probably your parents too, right? Hard worker, great work ethic, smart, but he's not leveling up the way he should be because he doesn't know how to get recognition for it. So that was my takeaway. Phenomenal point in the book. Out of everything in the book, that was probably one of my favorite takeaways.
I had a very similar one, which was more related to my, even though this is talking about introduction to the workforce, I found it resonated a lot with my college career generally, which was in that I struggled academically in high school, went to Whitewater. And when I got to Whitewater, I had something to prove. I was putting a lot of my self-worth on the judgment of others. I knew pretty early on, I wanted to get super involved on campus. I wanted to take some serious leadership roles, and I wanted to absolutely dominate them win after win in some serious personal accomplishments so that I could almost make it up to parents, other family members, and other people who support me. My struggles in high school academic. Ultimately, what happened is stretched myself too thin. And sure, I got great personal accolades, but I also up struggling academically, right? And that was largely based on that real need that I felt to seek out positive judgment from other people.
Alex, initial thoughts for this chapter?
Yeah, the concept is so interesting. And after reading this chapter, just made me want to take the book, and I'm going to send it to more people in my circles. And whether that's volunteer groups or coworkers or other friend groups as well, because in my conversations, naturally, we're going to talk about how is your job doing? How is work? Do you like it? And it's a constant conversation of wanting to get to that next level. And taking a step back from those conversations, I'm like, last time I talked to them, they were trying to get to this next level. And they're like, once I finish this project, once I get this new title, everything's going to be much better. And now that they're at that level, and we're still talking about the same thing, it's still about wanting to get to the next paycheck, get to the next promotion, get to this next achievement in their career, when the opportunity continues to shrink as you go up the ladder. There's less chances. You're continuously being judged. The judgment may not be equal as you may think it is. And we talk about in large corporations, this may be just a grading system, and that's how you're rated to get your promotion or get your pay increase. And that may not be equitable across all individuals in that organization. I say may not, it is not across individuals. It takes in personal judgment as well. We talk about that heading down the road to not good enough, fewer opportunities for less real estate with more restrictive covenants. As when high achievers look up, they think they just need to work harder and longer, do their best, but that guarantees nothing. Ben, I think you had a really good mindset though on when you work, when you have achievement, you celebrate that, you're happy with it, you get excited, you want to show it off in seemingly a healthy way. It seems my perception is you're not getting that achievement and saying, dang, if only I had X more dollars attached to this, it could have been great. And maybe you do. It doesn't come across that way to me. And I think that's a big part of that as well, because I think you get motivated by that excitement of the work you're doing in this today and not just motivated by, oh, I can get even higher up the ladder.
And overall, speaks well to a different type of professional. This is a different road that is possible for anyone. And that road is following your meaning. Like, what is giving you meaning? And I think putting that into work, and that is a different idea of what work is. I think when we talk about generational differences, the idea of work is different. I want my work to be meaningful. I want my work to impact my community. I want my work to do a bunch of million different other things than just give me a paycheck every 2 weeks. And
I agree.
That's why the idea of following, in the sense that throwing away the ladder and really focusing on how you can leverage relationships and how you can be that positive person on these teams and show people that there is a different way going about your career. And I think, honestly, young people are desperate for something different because middle management is not as sexy as it used to be. It's just not.
I agree. And first and foremost, I think the meaning, we call it the commission, right? Because part of my commission is getting paid on a deal. The other part of the commission is knowing that I closed an awesome deal, right? I helped them, most importantly, I helped myself, but also it builds the confidence so that I can go home each night and be like, yeah, I made a difference. And that way I can go to bed and actually sleep, as opposed to what Alex feels every once in a while, which I am guilty of as well when it comes to being a perfectionist. To jump into the meat and potatoes of the ladder building, he had a good sentence here. When it comes to succeeding in your career, the skills needed to advance successfully are about building relationships and selling your ideas and making decisions, not on personal achievement. And I think there's a lot to unpack there, but the one that stands out to me the most, coming from somebody who is in a high stress, high revenue, pounding all the time, like only revenue focused, that's my job right now. And part of the thing that stood out to me was about building the relationships, right? And building a meaningful relationship and getting to know people. And that's something I really struggled with. So the book was a great reminder to take my time, actually connect with the people that I'm working with, especially those who are higher up, and taking a step back and understanding what is needed for me to help you, right? Because they have more responsibility, right? I think we all agree the job doesn't get easier. You just get better and you get more responsibility. And that excites me, right? But how can I help them so that I'm not only fast-tracking them, but I'm fast-tracking myself? Right? It's a symbiotic relationship. It's like when the fish gets on the back of the whale and munches the algae off it. So great sentence, real eye-opening. It was a great reminder to slow down. And coming from a fast-paced environment, it's something that's not talked about at all. But then I watch all these employees at my company just completely stall out and feel like they're going nowhere because we're not reminded to actually be human.
Yeah. I think that's a nice transition. So one of my favorite quotes in here, and that he takes from another executive coach, but is what got you here will not get you there.
Good point.
That is powerful.
What page is that on?
That is on 19. I really think we talk about building people leaders to be better equipped with empathy and emotional intelligence. That is exactly what I think of when we talk about what got you here won't get you there. And it's interesting because as we go through college, like, you're taught tangible skills. And I think when we think of a productive person, a lot of the hiring skills that folks are looking for are those communication skills, are emotional intelligence, are those things that we don't spend any time in the classroom talking about. But how to complete a VLOOKUP, you betcha we got it. So I think it's really interesting for us as we are really early in our career. I think one of the most powerful things I can do right now is observe, because there is so much to be learned by those around you that I think you can then implement in, whether it be your leadership style and how you lead, whether it's without positional authority or otherwise, or as when you move up and maybe are then charged the care of other people, which is as important as being an individual contributor. So I think that's really interesting. I'd really love to hear your thoughts on really the idea of what got you here won't get you there.
I think for me specifically, that is ultimately fairly true. I think, and in a pretty explicit way, in the sense that I have no family members that have, or no members of my family circle have gone to college, right? I didn't know what it took to get to college, and I got in. And I know that what it took to get there will not get me to the next step of my professional career. There's a lot of things that I need to work on about myself in order to be successful in the field of higher education. That's time management and organization. That's certainly being able to enter spaces that are well out of your comfort. And then that is, for me, having a better understanding of where people are at and where they're coming. I think specifically in higher ed, it's a pretty mixed bag of students, right? Some people are born almost predestined to go to college, right? Their parents went to college, their grandparents went to college. There was no chance on the day they were born that they were going to ultimately get a degree. And that's not true of all students. And each one of them kind of experience it differently. So understanding that, I think, is something that I've been working on. Actually, this is a good point to connect with the idea and the importance of relationship. I think it's certainly true that it's advantageous and beneficial to build relationships for your personal success. But the inverse of that is also, I find it pretty fulfilling to be able to assist other people in their personal success. That's in some cases helping, looking over someone's application grads, helping them with an exam. What's minor academic related because we're educator. But I think there are plenty of examples in a corporate thing as well. Really in any sense, the chance to, I think there's something to really be said about building those relationships and being able to provide that to them as well. Because there, I do think that there's a sense of pride and fulfillment for the person who's doing it, right? And then certainly for the person who's also assisting them. I can't think of a better feeling than assisting a friend in achieving something that is personally and professionally very meaningful. So I do think that when it comes to being an advocate, that's certainly something to think about. Those cases where you might be the one thing that might be able to assist them in a hurdle that's stopping them from a rightfully deserved promotion. And maybe you're not the only thing, but maybe you're just one small little that is a part of a whole thing that gets them to where they need to go, regardless of whether or not you're a cog in that or really a driving force. I do think that something for me professionally very rewarding about being able to assist other friends, or not even just friends, but professional colleagues move forward.
I agree. My greatest success has come from teaching other people how to do what I do.
It's interesting as we talk about these issues and really pivoting towards change. I really love the examples that Alan uses in this book to talk about change and changing culture. I've always been fascinated by change and implementing change, because I know the old adage is the only constant in your life will be change. And that's always fascinated me, specifically in organizations and when talking about people. Because going back to what we said, what got you here won't get you there. You should be constantly evolving. You should be picking up new skills, closing gaps that you had previously, maturing, growing up. I think these are all intertwined, but I'd really love to talk more now specifically about change and really from your reading, what did you like about what he was talking about? Maybe how it draws directly from the experience you have in your organization. I'd really love to hear it.
People have a hard time accepting it. And I think it is the downfall of a lot of organizations. Like you look at companies who make it a long time. You look at Apple, right? Facebook. And even Facebook is still new. But what is Facebook doing? They're changing, right? Facebook, they saw Instagram blowing up. They bought Instagram. Let's just use Apple. Like Apple's been around for years and years. And most of us in this chat are still using their products. Like change is the driving force of everything. And for those who accept change, you're typically setting yourself up for success. And for those of you who resist and just company, like it's not just a company thing. I think it's a people thing. I think that is the differentiator between what puts people through college and what doesn't put people through college is them willing to change to a new schedule. And I think there's a lot that goes into that, such as mental health. And I think there's work ethic, discipline. I think that is just all accepting of change. But that's my take. I love change. I wish we changed more often.
I think adaptability to change is key to really success in any profession, right? I gave a lot of examples from companies. I think in education, I think great example, think of some of the professors we had who were just completely ill-equipped to deal with our transition to online learning.
Ridiculous.
And think of the couple good ones that we had who really did a great job of putting together an online course, right? I have names floating through my head right now for both. And the professors ultimately, and I'm sure teachers as well, who struggled the most with it were probably ones who weren't really trying to integrate technology in the classroom in the first place, right? And I don't want to minimize the struggle of teaching at all, but I do think it's a poignant example of adaptability best being a very important quality in success and adaptability to change. One thing that I'm curious about is I feel like we're talking a lot about adaptability to change. What about initiating change? Being a proponent.
I was just about to bring that up. Why change? What initiates change? I don't have the answer to that question.
Well, I think it's very unique to the situation because it's going to be, theoretically, you're trying to fix or improve. And I think those are the driving forces for change. I think when we talk about changing culture, that's harder because you can change a process, no problem. That's the company policy. That's how you follow it. I think people are much more complex and offers a lot more opportunity that requires long, like he says, endurance. Yes. So on page 24, changing a culture is a test of endurance. And I think that is one of the most real statements I've read in this book because
I have that underlined too.
It takes so much time. Because people are especially, it's interesting, as I work part-time in a remote organization and trying to implement different programs for change, it's interesting because as how connected we are, it's a whole new layer when you take a remote organization and trying to implement different changes, specifically around culture. We're trying to implement more of a mentoring environment where more folks, senior leaders, senior associates are interested in being mentors. And we have younger folks that are early career that are in desperate interest of mentors, trying to implement that in an organization that's had versions of it that have been unsuccessful is interesting. So I'd love to hear your kind of experiences in maybe change processes around culture and what that looks like.
I feel like change is really hard or can be very hard in an organization. And you talk about changing a culture as a test of endurance. And I was going to read that same line too in a little bit because I think it is really impactful and clearly has resonated with most of us. And I think there's change comes typically when it's needed. And I think there's change that's proactive. And I think there's change that's reactive. Reactive is maybe going to be forced upon. Someone's telling you this needs to be changed. And I think it goes back to the example that Dr. Patterson has in the group then in the factory. You're going to have the second group where it's the, this was not my idea mentality, where change is going to be really hard because the leader's not bought in. the managers aren't trained as coaches. And part of it comes down to an employee training and mindset, but I think it part of that needs to come from the top for, or if not the top, some leader that is going to be the catalyst for that change and be pushing forward to have that change. And I think it'll be easier in the proactive instance because there's a want along with the need versus the reactive.
And he said, he lays out what it requires for success. A leader, believer in charge, an engaged team around them, a set of value-based behaviors. That was the basis for a homegrown talent development process. Managers trained as coaches. Like, he lays out, I think, some things that could be applicable outside of the example he provides. But it's really interesting as early career folks seeing that and seeing successful change implemented and a lot, and in my experience, a lot of unsuccessful change that's been implemented as we've all worked in and been very involved in higher education. We've seen plenty of examples where change was not implemented effectively. And we saw and felt a lot of the afterward effects of those things. So I think that's really something I really like that he brings out and discusses. And his example is so intriguing and easy to understand and easy to follow, which I really liked.
I would think one personal experience I've had, I think it's really more of a cautionary tale now. And I know all of you will understand where I'm going with this, is that I often see change fail when it is performative and very surface level change that really isn't change, but people who are trying to give the appearance that they're trying to bring about pain. And I think in many of those cases, it is done with the best of intention. I think it can be problematic because functionally, structures aren't changing. They're just getting surface level makeup. And so that is always something that I think about when I think about change, and certainly with Bill bringing up higher education, right? There's areas where dire, not just necessarily change, but improvement, a willingness to experiment with new ideas and things is very important. And ultimately, at times, formative statements of support, opposed to legitimate support that throws resources and maybe time and attention towards.
Are there any food for thoughts from? And feel free to add any other tidbits or nice takeaways that you found from the chapter, but are there any food for thoughts that you folks think would be good for us to discuss?
I think the chapter's just last sentence before the food for thought was one of the biggest messages that stuck with me in these first just three chapters of the book. It's time to stop blaming and thinking somebody owes you something, particularly when it comes to workplace engagement. Finding meaning is your responsibility. And I think that's why I've loved what I do so much through high school, through college, through my career. And I stay overly busy and people question that sometimes on why I'm doing so much, why I like to constantly be working on projects or working towards the next thing. It's because I enjoy it. And it's having some fulfillment in that continues to motivate me. I think we've talked about a little bit already, being able to do things either in our job or finding job adjacent things that we can do that have impact on the people around us. And we're teaching them something. We're helping these individuals learn, grow, move on to their next step for them. I get fulfillment for that. And it's why I stay engaged, just to continue to be part of that change.
I think one of the things that excites me that really helped me because when I first read this book, I was just graduating my undergrad. And this helped me understand that it's okay that my career might not look linear. And I think that was a really hard thing for me to understand. If I'm trying to pursue meaning, if I'm trying to pursue purpose in my work, it will not look linear. It might look very sporadic. It might look really different. And I think this kind of gave me a lot of permissions in a way that I should not always be looking for maybe a linear role after I'm done with my master's program. Like, maybe it isn't a very linear role like that I would have assumed for myself as I leave for my undergrad. It might look crazy different. That's why I think like spending a ton of time and constantly looking at different opportunities that and doing different work that, hey, this sounds fun. Instead of, oh, this will pay my bills. That's important. But like looking at really what the work is definitely been more of a focus for me.
I think part of the American dream.
I think it's still okay to be part of organizations that are built for that linear growth and be in roles that do grow in a linear fashion, but not be striving for that. That's not your key motivator, because I think that's an important point.
Yeah. Any other thoughts?
I think I agree with both of you. I think ultimately is having come to terms with not having a linear path. Had it occurred to you, I think, in the same way that it did for me, that growth, like as an individual, just really isn't that linear. There are ups and downs, a lot of lateral moves, persistent experimentation and failure, right? And I think there's something to be said about the symmetry between both of those items, right? Because I think Ben just said it, right? The American dream in that sense for a lot of people is getting a job, moving up the chain as high as you can go, financial success. But my experience has been that personal success and achievement has really not been that linear at all. There are walls, there are high points, there are areas where you're learning and areas where you feel like you've learned a lot. So it is interesting to me that kind of that symmetry there.
I think there's an uncomfortable mindset shift for myself to move out of seeking that linear growth gratification, though. For me, growing up in, I grew up in Cedarburg, Wisconsin. We affectionately called it the Cedar Bubble. And I felt like growing through school and growing my community, it was like, all right, let's keep growing, achieving what I can, get to the top. Eventually, I had to leave the Cedar Bubble, went to University of Wisconsin-Whitewater, kept growing, achieving what I could, getting involved in everything I could, still in this bubble of Whitewater. There was community, getting to know the town, getting to know every bit about the university and how it worked. We reach the top of this linear growth, and then you go out into the world, and then it feels like you're starting almost all over. And that's, I feel like, an uncomfortable inflection point for me. And most of that, I feel, is what we were taught in school to continue to get to that next point. But it makes that change hard and uncomfortable. And it's something that I think I've still found comfort in, being an area where you know the clear direction, but it can be unhealthy. It talks about in the book the unhealthiness on your body from just the stressors and pressures of trying to go after things that maybe aren't attainable in that ladder. And I think I've been lucky with being in a really supportive job and finding groups that in the community that are really fun and motivating to be part of. But it can still be hard and uncomfortable to seek out any change.
And one of the things I wanted to say to what you said specifically about feeling like you start over, you really don't. It might feel like that, but you really don't, because you have relationships you didn't have. You have skills you didn't have. You have so many lived experiences that you didn't have before that better inform you for the future. And I think that isn't talked about really much at all. The kind of the bubble popping that you're talking about, of going from even from middle school to high school, like that kind of like you start all over, you aren't. It's very different. And I think that is a really good point that you brought up.
I really like that, because I've been thinking about a lot this transition from undergrad to graduate, right? And something that occurred to me is that feel way more supported in doing higher education now than I did then, right? Because very supportive parents, but they hadn't gone to college. So there's that lack of support that they can provide. But in this sense, even though we all live pretty far away from each other, I have a personal and professional concern about where I'm headed. Will, for example, is one of the first guys I call up and just talk through it with. And there's a good handful of people who I've developed relationships over the course of 4 years who I can rely on to, at the very least, let me talk out loud about where I'm at, what I want to do, what my options. I find that very helpful. And Alex knows full well that even back in student government days, if something big was on my radar, Alex was one of the first people that I talked to. And it was because I built relationships that kind of prepared me in a sense, and also were continuously being supportive of me. So I did really like the sense that I'm not where I'm at, or I'm not restarting, right? I'm not where I was 4 years ago. I'm in a different space with different relationships that I can rely on. And I'm personally in a different space too. I'm different than I was, even though I might feel like the smallest or the lowest thing on the totem pole, what have you, right? Yeah, I like that.